that presents real challenges for reporting. So it doesn't surprise me that this is a story that hasn't gained national attention just yet. I certainly hope that in the near future, a judge will see it our way and suggest that at least some of that document can be segregated, some information can be disclosed to us, and that ends up being the thing that draws more eyes to this document.
We've been speaking with Omar Farah, staff attorney at the Center for Constitutional Rights. You can find their work online at ccrjustice.org. Omar Farah, thank you so much for joining us this week on Counterspin.
I really appreciate your interest in the story. Thanks a lot.
And that's it for Counterspin for this week. Counterspin is produced by FAIR, the National Media Watch Group based in New York. If you missed part of today's show or you'd like to hear previous shows, you can find them and transcripts on FAIR's website, fair.org. The show is engineered by Alex Noyes. I'm Janine Jackson. Thanks for listening to Counterspin.
All right, and you are listening to KBOO Portland. Stay tuned. Coming up next, Bread and Roses. My name is Lady Monte.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of a benefit for Right to Health on Sunday, March 25th at Mississippi Pizza in Portland. LaRonda Steele, 2-8 The Native, and Strike 9 will be performing as part of the While Rome Burns benefit for Right to Health. Right to Health breaks down barriers to healthcare by providing mobile health outreach services, workshops, research support, and more. Again, that's a benefit for Right to Health featuring LaRonda Steele, 2-8 The Native, and Strike 9 on Sunday, March 25th from 5 to 7 p.m. at Mississippi Pizza, 3552 North Mississippi Avenue in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of Americana singer-songwriter Libby Roderick, Saturday, March 24th from 7 to 9 p.m. at the Levin Community Center in Portland. Libby Roderick is an internationally known environmental and peace activist and musician. This concert contributes toward building community through music. Again, that's Americana singer-songwriter Libby Roderick, Saturday, March 24th from 7 to 9 p.m. at the Levin Community Center, 5431 Northeast 20th Avenue in Portland. More information is available at kboo.fm on the right-hand side of the homepage under Community Events.
Light shining out from our eyes and the dreams resting deep in our souls.
Hello, everybody. This is Lady Monte, and we're here with another episode of Bread and Roses. Our collective brings you this show every Friday night at 6 p.m., and women have had this forum on KBOO since 1978. That is 39 years, making it the longest-running feminist news program and affairs radio show in the country. This airspace is here to be shared, so we are open to new members. If you are a woman in body or spirit, we will help train and support you to be in front of the mic or behind the scenes. If you're interested in being on the air as a producer or as a guest, please contact KBOO's volunteer coordinator, Ani Haynes. You can also find us on KBOO's website, kboo.fm/breadandroses, or on Facebook at KBOO Bread and Roses Radio. And tonight, we have a very special treat. The author of the book, What the Hell is Going On, M.L. Lori, is in the studio. Hey, Lori, how are you doing?
I'm fine, lady. Thanks for having me.
Thank you so much for joining us. We're really excited to hear about your journey and to hear about your philosophies with your four decades of experience in psychotherapy and counseling mental health fields.
Yeah, I've been in the field of mental health for 40 years now.
Wow, okay. Well, wonderful. Thank you so much for being here. You know, as a journalist and as a media producer, a content producer, I'm constantly trying to utilize airwaves and utilize media in a way that's going to help people, drop some breadcrumbs and prepare people with tools and with insights that's going to shape their experience for the positive. And I've noticed on your online persona, a lot of your experience is related to relieving your suffering and the suffering of others. And it all started with a quest. Is that right?
Yeah, that would be absolutely correct.
Cool.
That's a quest, I think, is probably the best word to describe it.
All right. Well, maybe you can tell us a little bit how your journey started. How old were you when you embarked on this journey?
The actual quest or some knowledge of the quest probably started when I was 11. I had gone to a movie with some friends, and for some unknown reason, they had become angry with me. And I went home crying and was comforted by my mother.
Uh-huh.
So I went to bed that night thinking, well, that's okay. I don't need these girls. You know, after all, I have my mother. But I woke up the next morning and my younger sister said, Mom won't get up and eat breakfast. So I went in there to talk to her and found my mother, and she had died.
Oh, no.
Yeah. And so that was like, I don't know what word to describe it. It was like total shock, beyond shock, actually. I talk about it briefly in the book in the introduction just to say how I began the quest.
Sounds like an extreme shift. You had, you know, experienced this social unsteadiness, I guess, this lack of security within your social sphere. And almost immediately, as children do, you know, put your trust and your faith in the security of your mother. And then almost as soon as you had made that conscious decision to do that, that security seems to have been taken away or was removed. So that, I'm sure that was a huge shift and required a lot of restructuring of how you understood the world and what was going to happen therefore.
Yeah, and that's why I mentioned the two events together, because I think it was because of the episode with my friends the night before and going to bed thinking all I need is my mother, and the next day her being gone set me into this huge confusion about what the hell is going on.
Right.
I mean, I was screaming that. And, you know, I know that now. I didn't know that then.
Dang.
So, yeah, my mother was actually very kind and loving. And I had some little quests earlier, because when I was like four, there was a kid eating the sand in my sandbox.
Yeah.
And I went into my mom crying. And my mom's MO was not to go, oh, well, I'm going to go tell that kid to stop. She said, well, you know, this child comes from a poor family and maybe he's hungry. And that broke my heart.
Yeah.
So that's, and it was that powerful. So that was my mother's way of being. So that, of course, without her there to explain to me what was going on, I was very confused.
Asking the question.
Yeah. And the big question then was, why do people hurt other people?
Right.
I didn't get it.
I see. And yeah, so you were 11 years old facing this question, and you had other siblings. What about other parental figures, other security figures, caretakers in your life? Mm-hmm. What did that scene look like when you were young and you were just starting to ask these questions?
Yeah, my father was a teacher, and he was a really good man, but he was a World War II vet and had also had some childhood traumas. So he was there, but he wasn't emotionally available.
I see.
And my mother's mother, my grandmother, I was very close to her, but she was, you know, a three-hour drive away, so I would see her from time to time. My older siblings were a little bit self-involved, but I had a younger brother and sister who were only 1.5 and 3.5 when my mother died.
Right.
And I think they saved me, because my heart was all about caring for them. So it kept me from going into any kind of tailspin, you know, because I needed to care for them.
Okay. And going throughout your school now, you ultimately ended up in the field of psychology for as far as Western education and obtaining a degree. And you have a lot of letters next to your name.
This is true.
A lot of certifications. Do you mind if I read them out and we can talk about?
No, you can read them.
M.L. Lori, PMHRN-BC, MSN-MHCNS, MDIV, or is that MD division? Or what do all these titles mean?
Yeah, I'm really not into titles, but I put them there because I'm in a Western world.
Right, right, right.
And that tells people that there might be some validity behind what I have to say. Personally, you know, instead of a, you know, RN, I make jokes about being a real, yes, I'm an RN, I'm a real nut, things like that. Because education hasn't been about education, like my whole life has been about self-development and how I can help people. And these are avenues for that. So the BCRN is board certified. Well, it would be board certified psychiatric mental health RN. The CNS is a clinical nurse specialist in the field of mental health. Which is a lot of fancy titles for when I did the degree 36 years ago, was a psychotherapist.
Okay.
Thing. It's just through the School of Nursing. And the MDIV is MDiv, a Master's in Divinity, which I got from a Buddhist college here in Portland, which is why I moved here to study with this particular teacher here in Portland.
I see. Okay. And I'd love to hear more about that later on, how a spiritual practice has shaped your professional practice. But for now, I'm really curious to see. Well, let's connect some dots about this journey and what it all looked like as far as how you ended up here in Portland. And so I see on your website, ultimately getting into the field of psychology, and that was directly after high school. Was there traveling in between?
No, I went being raised by my father, teacher, education was very important. And so I wanted to be able to help people, but he also, being raised by a man, it was a man sort of education. You got to be able to take care of yourself. So right. Nursing was that twofold. I could always get a job, but I could also help people. But very quickly, I learned that I wanted to be help, because in medical nursing can be very difficult sometimes because you have all these tasks you have to do and you see all the emotional suffering that you don't have time to address.
Right.
And I found that disturbing. And so I was obviously a person to go into mental health. So I went into mental health. I started working in psych hospitals, seeing the trauma that people experience when they go in the hospital,
right.
Wanting to help people stay out of the hospital. So that sent me into wanting to get a therapist job.
I see.
And so that's what I did. And so once I did that, I was 28 when I started doing my first therapist job in a community mental health center in Indianapolis.
Okay.
So I worked in the outpatient program, but I also helped set up and worked in what was called at that time a partial hospitalization program. It's kind of like an intensive outpatient program
where I see.
People come several hours, several days a week. And so that led me into, well, what would happen is that people would come and see me, and like maybe there was an issue within the family or they were depressed or whatever, and I kept getting this feeling that I was helping people put a Band-Aid on what the initial problem was, but all I could see was all the rest of the suffering.
Right.
And they would leave my office, and it's like, well, but what about all this human suffering? And I first initially thought about the book because I went into a staff meeting at the end of one day, and I went in and I said, you know, I'm going to write a book called What the Hell is Going On? Because that's the question I have asked all day long.
Right.
And everybody laughed, and you know, because they think, you know, like it's a joke. But part of me knew I was serious. So that started me on to the next journey.
Okay.
Luckily, I had met a psychiatrist. That was my first job after grad school when I became a therapist. There was this lovely psychiatrist named Hal Nichols who introduced me to the Association for Humanistic Psychology, which was really lovely because you can learn kind of little therapy techniques like neuro-linguistic programming, things like that. But also, there were all kinds of innovative classes like tuning into your intuition and you know, all kinds of different levels of things that were outside of the box of Western psychology. And I found Western psychology very limiting and
right.
insufficient. And so getting into the, which also I had a lot of friends in the New Age movement, so I was expanding in all these different spiritual directions. And the humanistic psychology conference or Humanistic Psychology Association was started by two pioneers who developed something called marriage and family therapy, one being Virginia Satir, and I put one of her, I quote her in my book. So when I go into coworkers and they're all concrete in the Western model and I step out of their model, I had backing to do so. And it's like, you know, somebody say, oh, well, such and such is this way. And it's like, you know, and I would disagree and they'd make a face like, well, no, they're just crazy. And I'd look at them and say, I do not know the wonders of the universe. I'm not going to call anyone crazy. Mm. Obviously the person has stress. They have this difficulty going on. They're suffering.
Right.
But I don't know everything that's going on inside of them, and I don't know the wonders of the universe, and I'm not going to stick in this little closed model.
Yeah, you know, I think that's one of the principles of Buddhism, which I find attractive, is the concept that suffering is suffering, and it's a very blanket term. And I suppose it's more of a concept, you know, human suffering, and experiencing it is relatable amongst all human beings, amongst our entire society. And it's a very common denominator of what shapes our experience here on this planet, joy and suffering, and how we relate and differentiate and also move in between the two as a conscious being with awareness. And what do we perceive to be joy, and what do we perceive to be suffering, and how does our perception ultimately decide which experience we're going to have? That's sort of the summary that I can conclude from that fact, that suffering is a human common denominator experience. So yes, kudos to you for embarking on that, to answer that question, and then move in and out of different philosophies which have been separated, and also just kind of explaining the same question in different ways. So Eastern philosophies and Western philosophies, and it seems like you found a way to answer that question with a marriage of both, with the Western traditions of certifications and the medical history, as well with the academia. And then can you tell us a little bit about the Eastern philosophy and the spiritual experience which has shaped your journey?
So I, when I was here in the West before I left for Asia, you know, I did a lot of traveling out in the world, mainly in, you know, the Caribbean and Europe, places like that. And I didn't see much different than my own culture. And I really was wanting to understand this human suffering. And I would talk to colleagues about, do you think that we all have this certain sadness that goes with living? And and they, a lot of them just go, I don't know. I never thought about it. And so it was like, I know somebody, are they not seeing what I'm seeing?
Yeah.
You know, I can't find anybody to talk to about this.
Yeah.
So I took, thinking I was taking a year off to just sort of travel and explore, and the karma of it all came my way, and I wasn't sure where I was going to go, but I ended up getting people around me that supported me to go to Asia.
Mm-hmm.
And when I would get scared about going to Asia on my own, I had this Israeli friend who'd mock me, you know, oh, you American, blah, blah. And then that'd make me mad. And so it's like, okay, well, I'm going. So I went, I went into Hong Kong and China and Thailand, and then into Nepal. And the people that I met when I was traveling that I enjoyed talking to were Buddhist.
I see.
So there's a place in Nepal called Kopam Monastery that every year they have a month-long November, they call it the November course. It's just a month-long course, introduction to Buddhism, they do every November.
Mm.
So I was there at that time, so I thought, well, I'll just take this because all these great people, you know, what is this stuff I keep hearing about?
Yeah.
And I walked into the first day that they were answering my questions.
Wow.
They were talking about basic human suffering. And not suffering like we tend to think on the big scale. This is just the thing. The question, what the hell is going on, is the question we ask all the time.
Yeah.
We might, and the reason the word hell is in there is because it's the emotion that gets involved in that, the confusion that gets involved with that question.
Mm.
So the book is actually what the hell is going on, the question. So I talk about the question. Then I talk about the secrets, which are parts of our human condition that people don't seem to know or shared, and then I talk about some answers. So when I walked into this Buddhist class, it was like all my questions are being answered. You know, like one of my questions that I would ask of teachers in the New Age movement is, you know, I say I pull up to a stop sign and it's my turn to go and somebody pulls out in front of me and I'm really angry because I could have been harmed because they pulled out in front of me. What do I do with that anger?
Right.
And they go, well, just send them love. And it's like, I'm not feeling love. I'm really angry. What do I do with that?
How are we supposed to punish them with love?
And it was just, I just kept hearing, send them love. But the Buddhists, they just say, pay attention. Where's that come from?
Yeah.
What is that about? Where do these things come from? And it's you said something earlier I was wanting to touch on, but it's kind of gone out from my mind right now. But
it might come back.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, and I think I remember reading something about the courage and bravery to inspect yourself is required when you read this book.
Oh.
Is that, and I think that's a quote on your website or perhaps maybe on somebody's review.
But it must be a review because I would never say that. That's too judgmental for me.
You gotta be brave. Well, I see that. So you broke it down a little bit already. This book is chopped up or sequenced in three different parts. Our secrets, some answers. And what's the third part?
The question, our secrets, some answers.
The question, our secrets, some answers. So the question is, what the hell is going on? The title of your book.
Mm-hmm.
And our secrets. Our secrets is basically what you're describing as the experiences we all share as humans. Why do we keep our own experiences secret? As in not talking about suffering, or we're not facing the things which induce suffering? Like, for example, is that a confrontational sort of or not necessarily confrontational, but is it a call out? Is it a point, a nod towards, you know, unresolved issues maybe in your psyche or in our humanity?
Actually, it's not. It's a very simple thing. The thing I noticed, and I think the thing about being a therapist that you're privy to, is that people tell you things they don't tell other people, that they would never tell other people.
Right, right, right.
And when you run self-development groups and think, you know, like I ran this group once with a social worker, and it was just like a woman's group who, professional women who were college educated, and you know, they were in there just more or less for self-development. And one woman was talking about being worried about what somebody else thought. And another woman speaks up and says, "Well, you do that? I thought I was the only one that did that." And then they all joined in. And the social worker and I looked at that because we're privy to this. We know that everybody worries about what other people think.
Right.
So the secrets are very much clearly lined up. Everyone wants to be loved. Everybody, you know, you're not alone in your pain and suffering. Everybody worries about what other people think. Everybody wears a mask sometimes.
Yeah.
You know, and it's just simply delineating very clearly what are our shared human experiences. And I want them out there because I want people to know they're not alone.
Okay. So getting the secrets out is a way to take power away from that idea that we're alone, and having needs that might be fulfilled sometimes or not fulfilled sometimes creates a sense of struggle, a sense of suffering. And that suffering we're left to deal with on our own, because it seems like it's a secret when we don't feel attached to other people's experiences. Is that what you're saying?
Well, sort of. I'm really saying that we don't talk about these things because it's very natural. It's a natural protection thing.
Okay.
You know, I don't want people to think badly of me. Right. I don't want to be vulnerable. But when you hide these things and you think you're alone in them, then you feel isolated, especially when you're suffering somehow. Then it's heightened.
Right.
You know, everybody, like the grass is always greener on the other side. Oh, I wish I was this person. Yeah, they don't have any problems. Well, that's not true. Absolutely not true. They are a human being, and they have the same issues and the same problems that you have on different levels and in different ways.
Of course, yeah.
One maybe more than the other. But we all want to be loved. These are not deep things. I'm trying to help people realize. I really want to put forth in the book to challenge this false myth that we have that was primarily in the Western culture, but it has dissipated throughout the world.
Right.
This false myth that you can find a stable happiness from exterior things.
I see. And so that's the secret. And then we've talked about what the wrong answer is finding joy and happiness with external things. And then we'll go to our music break here in just a moment. But just give us a clue about what we'll be talking about next when we come back, some answers. Can we find that lasting, stable happiness that we're all seeking?
Yeah, and that's one of the things you were talking about before, are the concepts that we create in our mind. That's really important that we talk about that.
Okay.
And that's a good place to start, because I use this analogy to help people not guilt trip themselves about the concepts that they have in their mind.
Okay. Well, thank you so much. We're looking forward to hearing more about your book when we get back from this music break. This is Lady Monte, and I'm going to play for you an instrumental called Supplication. Okay, everybody, and we are back from our music break with more from M.L. Laurie. What we were just listening to was an instrumental track called Supplication by Rabab Instrumentals EQ. I found that on SoundCloud, so you can just do a quick search. Hello, ML.
Hello.
Thank you again for being here. And what we were talking about was kind of the format of your book. And while we were doing our music break, I was wanting to talk to you a little bit about the sense I'm getting from how this book is shaped and the intention behind it, as well as the platforms and the linguistic tools and the perspective you come from. It really comes from a caretaking attitude. And you've taken on a huge emotional platform here to have an attitude of caretaking for all of humanity. What sort of analogies, what sort of tools do you use to synthesize that process to make it more applicable? Because obviously everyone in humanity is going to be different from each other. They have different experiences. They have different perspectives on what is suffering, what is joy. How do you explain to somebody this bottom line concept of secrets, questions, and answers? Like, how do you explain how you go about working with somebody if you are going to be hosting a workshop or a session with them?
You know, I kind of have this thing of, I would hope that some therapists would actually pick up this book and give it to their clients and have them look at it. So then when the client comes back in, I can be the bad guy.
Okay.
Because this book brings up certain kinds of things. And from my perspective, it's like we're brought into this world with our hard drive. And I talk about this in the book. And it's very important to look at it this way, too, because people get frightened about looking at themselves. They get all kinds of stories. We are a culture that is totally disconnected. I mean, in my generation, it was drugs, sex, and rock and roll. Then, you know, now it's become it became more of the computer. Now it's the cell phone. And we're totally not connecting to ourselves, and we're not connecting to others. Because, I mean, that's the new drug. And none of this is good or bad or right or wrong. That's one of the secrets. Everybody is where they are, and it's okay. You are where you are, and it's okay where you are, and we're all just doing what we think we need to do to be okay.
I see.
But people get these myths going about what it's like to go inside and how frightening that can be. And what they don't really realize is that that is the freeing thing. I would have clients come in and say, you know, I feel like I'm just going to blow up. You know, and so what they don't realize, and that you start to explore with them, is the idea of that blowing up is that they've just stuffed and stuffed and stuffed, and there's no more place to stuff, and it's like the pressure cooker, and things want to come out. So in the book, I use this analogy of a computer. You know, you're brought into this world with your hard drive, you know, the brain and all the systems that operate the body, you know, like the hard drive of a computer. And then all the software programs are put on your hard drive.
Okay.
And some of them are really good, you know, like, you know, how to read and how to write. But a lot of them are faulty. And not only are they faulty, like nobody, one of the secrets is nobody knows what's going on inside of you but you.
Okay.
But when you're a small child, people are telling you all the time who you are and what you are.
Yeah.
But they don't really know. Mm-hmm. And all they're really telling you is what their software programs are.
Mm-hmm.
So you come in, you know, people grow up with these insecurities or these negativities. And the parent is, it's not like, you know, the parent sat down and said, okay, today's Monday and this is the way I'm going to mess with my kid today. The parent's where they are and they're doing what they think they need to do to be okay. And, you know, and that translates out onto their children. And so, but not only are you being taught these things by parents and everybody around you and the TV and everything else, you're also seeing it through a child's mind.
I see.
And a child's mind cannot abstract. So it's a very concrete mind.
Please keep telling us more. Would you like to read some of these secrets that are listed in your book?
Oh, sure.
Yeah, maybe you could read aloud some of a chosen excerpt from your book. I'm going to take a caller right now.
Okay. Do you want me to do that now while you're taking the call?
Yeah, go ahead and do that.
Okay, so the secrets, I divided them up into secret feelings, secret thoughts, and secret behaviors just because it's not really delineated that way. We're not delineated thoughts, feelings, that kind of thing. But it makes it easier to talk about the concepts. So like secret feelings, we're not alone in our pain and suffering. There's a basic sadness that we all experience as part of our human experience. And this is a really important one because a lot of people actually experience this sadness.
Yeah.
And they end up thinking they're depressed and they get on antidepressants. But antidepressants, you know, it's like taking an antidepressant when you're in mourning.
Yeah.
Antidepressants don't make your suffering go away.
No, they don't.
And so, but we all get confused. So we all want to be happy.
The secret is we all get sad sometimes.
Yes. And it relates to the suffering because, okay, today, you know, I had to do this, I had to do that, I had to go to work, I have to get my kids together.
Yeah.
It's just this, and this is what Buddhism talks about. They call it samsara, the suffering of change, the suffering of sickness, the suffering of getting old. It's just suffering that happens with life.
Yeah.
And there's kind of a sadness that goes with that, but it's not the depression where you can't get out of bed. It's just a natural thing.
Yeah.
And you know, it doesn't have to interfere with your living.
Okay.
Do you want me to go on with the
yeah, please,
the secrets?
And I'll just go ahead and throw a quick shout out to our listeners.
Okay.
If you're interested in calling into the show with a question on air, you have a question for ML Lori or a comment, please call into the air room at KBOO Studios. That's 503-231-8187. And we've got a new phone system, so I'll do my best to make sure you get on air without any hitches, but I think we got it figured out. Again, that phone number is 503-231-8187. That's the KBOO air room where you can call in right now to be on Fred and Roses and ask a question or make a comment. So yeah, please, let's hear more from your book, because originally I approached you for coming onto Bread and Roses when we were discussing for another show topic, alternative forms of communication. And the show topic was about call out culture, and it was about language we use, which addresses behavior we use, which are both types of communication between human beings, language and also behavior, actions and words. And I'm still gonna have the show at one point, hopefully. But I'm really into investigating the cycle and the exchange between words and behaviors, and how we can interrupt behaviors with words without continuing to add to that cycle of suffering. If somebody's behavior is causing us suffering, you know, in what way can we speak out of love and give them love, and also maintain love for ourselves? And so that's why I wanted to talk to you originally. And it sounds like when we started talking, you had this amazing book that sounds like a tool just for that.
Well, and actually, in the Some Answers questions, there's actually an outline for Aware in the Moment Choices. And it talks very much about that thing. Because one of the things that happens is that realizing that, you know, you can say or do whatever you want to do towards me, but I am in control how I choose to take that.
Okay. Just a moment. We're going to see who this caller is. KBO air room. Oh, sure. Yeah, just one moment. And I'm going to put you on hold and then we'll put you right on air, okay?
So that's great. Please, anybody that wants to call in.
Yeah, we got a caller.
I think, you know, this is actually simple stuff. And if you call in and ask questions, it's easier for me to help you see that.
Okay, caller, can you hear us? Caller, can you hear us? All right, we lost that caller. No problem. And drop that now. Okay.
So I put it in my book. There's a writing. It was found on the wall of Mother Teresa's children's home in India. And it's called Do It Anyway, and there's other different titles for it. I don't know if you've ever heard of it.
Do It Anyway.
It's here, I'll just read a little bit of it.
Okay.
People are often unreasonable, irrational, and self-centered. Forgive them anyway. If you are kind, people may accuse you of selfish, ulterior motives. Be kind anyway.
Yeah.
If you are successful, you will win some unfaithful friends and some genuine enemies. Succeed anyway. So she goes along this line and ends with, in the final analysis, it's between you and God. It was never between you and them anyway. So what I go on to say is that it's between you and yourself.
Yep.
Yeah. You know, because in anything, somebody, you pass somebody you know in the hallway and you say hello and they don't say hello back.
Right.
So you can choose how to interpret that. Are they mad? You know, you can get hurt or you can get angry, you know, and you can have all these interpretations going on, which is all within your own mindset, which is so key to begin to realize how much control you have over your own happiness by what you produce in your mind.
Right.
And so if you go and you talk to that person, then maybe they are don't like you or whatever. You can still have the choice how to respond to that because, well, I'll come back to that. But maybe you find out from them that their son just wrecked the car and they didn't even see you. And so you went through all this emotional stuff. I give an example in a book that there's this woman I know.
Yeah.
And it was Christmas time. And she gave, at work, she gave a mug, particular kind of mug to two of the women that she worked with.
Right.
And one of them came and thanked her and the other one didn't. So for months, she's thinking, well, why didn't she thank me and all this stuff? So somewhere 6 months later, out of the blue, something comes up with this. Well, she finds out that the woman never got the mug.
Oh.
So she thought that the woman didn't like her and was upset with her. And the woman was hurt because she gave the mug to somebody else and not to her. So there was all this for 6 months of suffering unnecessarily on both their parts.
Wow.
Whereas they, you know, if she had just simply said, hey, did you like the mug I gave you?
Right.
So this whole internal process of you can start to see how you can create your own world. And in the secrets I talk about, it's really important in the thinking process of how we're all programmed different. Nobody knows what's going on inside of you. And then we get this whole idea of I can't control what you think or do or feel.
Yeah.
If I could, like this woman I used to work with once would always go, well, you made me feel about this and this and this. And I would try to talk to her about it and I'd say,
listen,
Sue, if I could control how you feel, you would not be feeling this way right now.
Yeah.
Because I would not want you to feel this way.
You'd be not so angry at yeah. me.
So you can blame other people for how you think and feel, but which they really in reality have no control, or you can keep your power. Because when you blame others, you create a certain helplessness. And you feel powerless. But if you take that power back, then you actually... do we have another caller, it looks like?
Yes, we do. Yeah, keep talking.
Okay. Well, if you keep your power...
Yeah,
Aaron. It just, you know, it seems... taking responsibility for yourself sometimes seems like it can be a big deal, but it isn't. It's power. It gives you power. You can't control how I think. You can't control how I feel. The only way people can control you is they can control what you do in certain areas. Say if you're in prison, you know, well, they're controlling that you're in that jail. Now, they can't control you any other way. Say, they told you, somebody said, well, you know, they can make you go here, they can make you go there. Well, really, they can't, because if they tell you you have to go here, you can say no.
Okay.
Now, they're liable to hit you or pick you up and take you there like we do small children. But technically, they can't control that. So the only way anybody can do any kind of control over you is physical control.
Yeah, right, right. And that's where we... I'm wanting to talk a little bit about power dynamics because I'm looking at some of the secrets here. You know, no one knows what's going on inside of us but us, and we're taught that we're incomplete and need things outside of ourselves for happiness or to feel complete. And I remember reading this one, where did it go? As children, we're programmed at a young age to believe what others say about us is true.
Mm, yes.
And that's something for me, which is especially poignant in my life, impactful, applicable. How I think we can all recognize the feeling of suffering when you understand that a narrative which you believe to be true about yourself, maybe because you've been told that or because that's the reality you exist in the physical realm, and it's not in alignment with your authentic self.
Yes.
We know that feeling of suffering when something, maybe you don't know that it's not true, but you know that it's not right.
Yes.
How do you go about articulating what that is? How do you start the process of introspection and building awareness, especially when, as a child, and many young people do, we're raised in an environment to be trusting of these people who assume control over our thoughts or assume control over our bodies a lot of the times?
Well, why wouldn't you? I mean, this is the person that gives you food,
right,
and water and shelter. And even in an abusive family,
right,
parents are extremely powerful.
Yes.
And like I say, most of them don't set, you know, say today's Monday and I'm going to mess with my child this way.
Right.
They're parenting to right. the best of their ability as to where they are at that time. Now, that doesn't excuse. I mean, they could have done this work themselves, you know. But we're really not talking about parenting. We're talking about us taking our power and having our happiness. And so the big thing to do is just pay attention. We go, you know, we get up every day and we reboot our computer and we have no idea what's on it. We're running on all these software programs and we don't even realize it.
Right.
So that, you know, the big thing to do is just pay attention.
Okay.
You don't have to do anything with anything. Something comes up and you get this little voice in your head that says, oh, you're lazy. But you know you're not, because you've been working all day and you've been doing this and doing that. And you know, where does that come from?
Where does that come from? Interesting. Yes. Okay. And I think it's about time for another music break. And when we come back, I think I'd like to follow up a little bit more on that and building awareness of finding the source of things, the source of that voice inside your head. And I'd also like to hear a little bit about your practice of expansion when we come back.
Okay.
Sound good? Sweet. So what we're going to listen to right now is DDFR. It's a instrumental version by Stevie D.
Thank
we're back. That was GDFR. Okay, and we are back with ML Laurie. Hey, ML, how are you doing?
Oh, I'm good. Thanks again for having me.
It's been such a pleasure. We got a couple great calls, some excellent comments so far. Lines are still open, 503-231-8187. If you have a question for ML Laurie or myself, we got about 8 minutes left in the show before we're going to power down for the evening. And ML, I hear you've got some readings for us about the concept of empowerment.
Yeah, just
expansion.
A little bit,
yeah.
Because I'm coming back to this core, this what I call the false myth. In part one, chapter two of my book, it's called Lasting Stable Happiness, and I'm just going to read you a little bit the synopsis of that, and then tell you a little bit about a gentleman named Albert Ellis. So I talked about the false myth, the mistaken belief that we're taught by our societies about how to find happiness.
Right.
This myth is about how we can find happiness through things outside of ourselves, through finding the right person, making a lot of money, accomplishing certain things, and the list goes on and on. To summarize the points we discussed about the false myth, they are: most societies encourage the false myth, a mistaken belief that a lasting happiness can be found from things outside of ourselves. This mistaken belief is an idealized, exaggerated reality. This outer search creates unhappiness and suffering in us. The outside search encourages the false belief that things outside of us, people, events, and so forth, are responsible for our feelings, thoughts, and behavior. This blaming of outside things for what we think, feel, or do, which has no truth in reality, leads to a feeling of helplessness that prevents the development of self-confidence and a high positive self-esteem. So one of the things that I talk about in the book is that, you know, I mean, again, you can do anything you want. You are where you are. You're beautiful. You're a lovely soul, whether you know it or not. And, you know, nothing's right or wrong or good or bad. This is all about ways to reduce your suffering. And if exterior things actually produced a stable happiness, then Princess Diana would never have been unhappy.
Right.
Bill Clinton would have never been insecure when he was president, not know what to do sometimes. Donald Trump would never be he has everything. He would never be doing some of the things he's doing that, from a professional perspective at a minimum, shows he has some low self-esteem issues, you know,
well,
and he's own childhood
least.
Issues.
Yeah.
And so this is why I just these are just keys. This is a beginning book to help you start to look at how you can find the stable happiness you want, because we all want it. Everything we do in life is all about how to be happy. Every single choice you make. You robbed the bank. Well, you robbed the bank because you wanted money, because you needed money to buy things, to get things. You know these crazy things like, not really crazy, but, you know, these mistaken beliefs of, you know, I have to kill Bobby because he took my girlfriend. And then, but these are all things. Everything is about being happy. There is a gentleman named Albert Ellis who was actually the creator of the first. Right now, you hear people talk about cognitive behavioral therapy and dialectic behavioral therapy, which are techniques for looking at how to change your mind. Albert Ellis was kind of the grandfather of all this. He developed something called rational emotive therapy, now called rational emotive behavioral therapy. So, looks like you have something that you want to say, and I'm just going to read his quote real quick.
Oh, no, you're fine.
Okay, are we good?
I'm just thinking, yeah. Okay, that's my thinking face.
So he, in his book, A Guide to Rational Living, he says that humans tell themselves various sane and crazy things. Their beliefs, attitudes, opinions, and philosophies often take the form of internal light sentences or self-talk. Consequently, they can change their self-defeating emotions and behavior by their clearly seeing, disputing, and acting against their internal philosophies. And again, remember, those internal philosophies were developed as software programs on your hard drive. Very often, I learned that when my mother died, my child mind said, because she was very kind and I saw some people be mean to her, my child mind said, if you let people walk on you, you will die. And I carried that through my life until I became an adult. And I realized that wasn't true. And my whole last thing is that, I end with a quote, you know, the quotes from John Lennon's song Imagine, because from my perspective, if we all found our power inside and didn't look outside, because as far as I'm concerned, I don't care who you are. You can be Vladimir Putin. Mm-hmm. If you feel like you have to have power over everybody and all over the world, I'm sorry, you have some self-esteem issues.
At least.
Because if once you feel good about yourself and you find your power within, you don't need external power, because it doesn't matter what anybody else does. You have your own internal power. You can sit here and call me all the names that you want. I will never take responsibility for your mind, because I have no control over it. I only am responsible for and have control over my own mind. So to take responsibility for other people is really no reality to it. You can do it, you know, and right. People will do it to you. Oh, it's your fault, da, da, da. It's like, but, you know, most of the time, if you had that control, I don't care if it's your husband, you know, who it is, you know, people would not feel the way that they feel if you had control.
Can we talk a little bit in the few minutes we have left about mm-hmm. your practice and what it looks like now, the practice of expansion, and maybe while you're in there, we can throw out the title of your book one more time, and we'll just list a couple of places where people can find more information about you.
Okay. So one of the things when I was in Asia, I had the good fortune of running into is some of the Qigong, Tai Chi. And then from that, I manifested, I realized, was able to develop a practice called Wu Jie Qi. So what happens is when you start doing these practices, in particular Wu Jie Qi, you can see it on my website. If you go to mllaurie.org, you can see a picture of me doing it. And what happens is there is this actual physical expansion when you start to let go. Even if you simply start to, because in the answer section, we talk about awareness, experiencing expression and letting go. Letting go is a very big key. And the more you let go, the lighter you feel. And in these physical actions of Wu Jie Qi, you can actually physically feel yourself sort of expanding. So expansion, the actual definition that I put on my website of expansion, I use that term because the definition is the process of state of increasing or opening something. So it just seemed apropos.
Seems like a fair concept. And what's the name of your website where you can have some of these philosophies and concepts described? And
okay, so you can go to mllaurie.org, okay. Or you can go to mlexpansion.org. I didn't mention it, but the acronym for what the hell is going on is WIGO.
Yeah, like that.
Yeah. And I talk about that in the book, because you can train yourself to, instead of going, what the hell is going on, you can do WIGO. And it's kind of hard to be angry and upset saying WIGO. It's kind of hard to be angry.
I can just imagine myself standing there with my hands on my hips being WIGO.
Yeah, it just doesn't kind of work. It's just about the word. So it's how to use the word, you know, to help you, you know, and it's explained in the book.
Yeah. So WIGO at mllaurie.org. You can find all about WIGO and the book, What the Hell is Going On. I know this book is also for sale on Amazon, Barnes & Noble, all the online. Mm-hmm. Do you plan on doing a book tour soon? I saw also that you were listed at Powell's, a local bookstore, as having a book there. Do you plan on doing a tour soon? And
well, my practice now is not, you know, I used to see people, I used to teach a lot of classes, the regular classes like, assertiveness training, and then some alternative classes like tuning into your intuition and letting go. But right now, I'm more into actually expanding my practice.
Okay.
I'm leaving for Asia again in August, and I intend to work on my second book, which tentatively is called Staying Open in a Closed World.
All right.
And it's more about, it's not for me to tell people their paths. So this first book is not telling people their path. It's just talking about taking a path. And the second book is talking about how you can actually find and get involved in a path.
Wonderful. And we'll keep an eye out for that and more of your works in the future.
Can I do one correction? If you're going into WIGO, it's www.wigo.org.
Oh, so that's a separate website. Okay.
No, it's the same site, but I'm just giving people different interests. People go, oh, you code the same thing. Well, you do.
All right.
Right. So yep. mllaurie.org, mlexpansion.org, or wiggle.org.
All right. And we got to close it out for the evening. Thank you so much for being in the studio tonight. Mm-hmm.
Thank you for having me.
And our collective brings you this show every Friday night at 6 p.m. Women have had this form on Kibu since 1978 for 39 years, making it the longest running feminist radio show in the country. This airspace is here to be shared, and this collective is open to new members. So if you're a woman in body or spirit, we will help train and support you to be in front of the mic or behind the scenes. If you're interested, please contact KBOO's volunteer coordinator, Ani Haynes. You can also find us on KBOO's website, kboo.fm/breadandroses, or on Facebook at KBOO Bread and Roses Radio. My name is Lady Monte. This has been a talk with ML Laurie, the author of What the Hell is Going On. Up next, we're going to have some music and hopefully Hard Knock Radio for you. Thanks a lot. Stay tuned.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of Tanya Stevens in Concert on Saturday, March 31st from 9 p.m. to 2:30 a.m. at the Tao Event Center in Portland. Tanya Stevens is an influential reggae artist who began releasing records in 1994. Opening the show will be Cat and Roots Revolution plus DJ Margo Hartenfeld. There will also be food and other refreshments. Again, that's Tanya Stevens in Concert on Saturday, March 31st from 9 p.m. to 2:30 a.m. at the Tao Event Center, 631 Northeast Grand Avenue in Portland. This is an 18 and over show. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
As life is much too quick for your hurry, and there's too many problems, so tell me, oh, why worry?
KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of Varsity Cheerleader Werewolves Live from Outer Space, the musical, showing March 16th through March 31st on Fridays, Saturdays, and Sundays at the Chapel Theater in Milwaukee, Oregon. Varsity Cheerleader Werewolves Live from Outer Space is an original comedy musical featuring cheerleaders, rebellious youth, evil aliens, puppets, and fueled by the songs of the 80s. Again, that's Varsity Cheerleader Werewolves Live from Outer Space, the musical, showing March